Welcome to the LarryNFishers.com podcast. I'm Larry Lannon. There's a lot to talk about when it comes to the Hamilton Southeastern Schools Foundation. There's the Giving Tuesday fundraising campaign, the Lilly Endowment Grant for School Counseling, and the fact that Freedom Kolb will be leaving her post as executive director of the foundation. But Freedom isn't going far. She will be going to work for the Hamilton Southeastern School District in an administrative role related to the Lilly Foundation grant. Freedom talks about all this and more in our conversation, recorded Saturday morning, November 18th. I'm at another, actually it's not another, it's just called the Broken Egg Cafe. Actually, another Broken Egg Cafe as I read this more carefully. It's in the municipal complex. It's right near Citizens State Bank as you approach City Hall from 116th Street in the Switch Building. I want to thank Seth Little. He's the area director for another Broken Egg Cafe. They are opening their new restaurant here in Fishers, and their first day of operation is not one for the public. It is one for a fundraiser for the foundation, Hamilton Southeastern Schools Foundation, and that's the subject of our podcast today. Freedom Kolb is with us today. Freedom, welcome. Great to see you.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me.
It's hard to talk to you at a public place because people come up to you and still want to talk to you while we're doing this.
I said I'm focused. I've got laser focus right now.
You'll be staring at this at what we're doing here. But it's hard because you have a lot of supporters here. This is a fundraiser, and it was very kind for another Broken Egg Cafe to tie their opening to a fundraiser for your operation.
It's been wonderful. Another Broken Egg has just been amazing to work with. Their food is amazing. Fishers loves breakfast, so I think they'll do very well here. But it's really fun to see so many long-term friends of the foundation that have been supporting us for a long time to receive a little perk and come in and everyone be here together.
So it's a very busy and noisy place, but Mr. Little has given us a 5 points locations where everybody can see us.
That's right.
But it may be a little bit noisy, so if you'll please just deal with that, the background noise, we'll just continue. Maybe a little music now, and then we're right underneath the speaker, so we'll have a little background music for once in a podcast. I want to start off with news that broke yesterday. We're recording this on the 18th of November. On the 17th, it was announced that you're going to be leaving the foundation.
I am leaving the foundation, but I will be very close by. I joke that I'm really just moving across the street. I will be continuing to do a lot of the mission work that the foundation has been doing, specifically around school counseling, mental health, social justice and equity, student success for all students, experiential learning. A lot of the work that really was made possible by the Lilly Endowment grant, the $2.1 million we just secured. So I'm excited to continue. I joke it's all the fun impact work that serves our educators and students, but not as much of the fundraising.
So this foundation is in that little brown building along Promise Road near Fishers High School.
Yes.
That's where the foundation is housed. So where are you going to be going when you take this job with the school corporation?
That's still to be determined. So I will sit tight in the brown house. We really like that location. Everyone out there in the brown house is intended to move back to central office when the renovation is done.
And that's still several months away.
Yes. We're thinking maybe about this time next year, maybe a little earlier.
Yeah. You've driven down Cumberland Road, and you see there's Cumberland Road Elementary is under construction. They've got some classes in the gym.
Yes.
So you got to hand it to those teachers. Although I hear it's going well, I'm sure it's an interesting experience to have elementary students in the gym.
I have been astonished by the attitude of Cumberland Road Elementary. They have just been, you know, let's get this done for our kids. I have not heard any complaints, and it really has shifted some workspaces because as they work in one area, they might have to shift to another. I think they're also using it as a learning opportunity for the children, you know, about design, you know, how to use math and construction, all of those fun things. It's really a testament to another incredible HSC school.
And the administration building, you know, I got to hand it to the administrators. They've put up with some very cramped quarters because they never really thought their space should be a priority. But now that the financial house is more in order for the school corporation, they're now doing what has really been needed for a long time, and that's more space in the administration building. And that's already underway. The school board has tried to switch their meeting to another location. Nothing has worked out, so they're still meeting in the under-construction administration building.
Yeah, and actually it's even impacted the foundation because we hold our monthly board meetings there, which is not possible because our board is comprised of 25 community leaders. So even just bringing in all that additional parking when it's at a premium. So we are currently on a world tour. We visit a new school every month, and they have really graciously hosted us, I must say, because we are there at the same time the buses are coming and going. So it is really just
the bus barn is there in the back behind the administration building. And if you're there when buses are going in and out, don't expect to go anywhere fast.
No, you're stuck there.
Yeah.
But everyone has been just remarkably gracious and, you know, really had a wonderful attitude toward the whole improvement process.
So that's the long term. And there's no way you could have a board meeting in that brown house.
No.
I mean, you'd be sitting on the floor, standing up. You wouldn't want that. But tell me more about this new job. Chris, let me just ask about exactly what's going to be entailed in this job you're taking with the school corporation.
Sure. It sprung out of the Lilly Endowment School Student Success grant that we were recently awarded. And the majority of the role will really be administering those funds, making sure that we are in compliance with the Lilly regulations and reporting, and making sure we're tracking the success. And also lessons learned. I was just at a Lilly technical assistance meeting yesterday, and this is a special kind of grant. I've done a lot of work with federal, state, and foundation grants, and normally they're pretty formal. In fact, normally technical assistance meetings are very, we want this report on October 1st, this report on February 4th, this is what will be included. This is a very collegial process. They are really trying to determine what is possible in school counseling, what is innovative in school counseling, and how can we lift the field. So it's very relationship-based. It will be a lot of give and take with Lilly, and so that's a large part of what this new position will do.
And we're going to talk more about that Lilly grant in a moment, but before I get into that, I want to ask about how the process that the board is at the foundation will now begin with your position being open. What's that process going to be like?
Hamilton Southeastern School Foundation already had a succession plan in place. And so at this point, the board of directors and the staff have activated that plan. It is a very thoughtful and deliberate plan that the search committee will work through. Tim McCoy, our past president, will lead the search. We have a mixture of advisory council and board members that will initially shepherd it, and then we'll bring on other stakeholders. So we are collecting resumes from hopefully dozens of really dynamic candidates. The committee will review those, and then that will determine the process from there. They have a tentative timeline where, you know, if there is a need for phone interviews in person and second, but the candidate pool will largely determine how that goes. But the real message is that we have the gift of time. I'm not leaving the area. I'm not even leaving the corporation. The intent is to find a dynamic leader that will serve all 21 of our schools.
Well, you answered most of my questions that I had for you about the timeline and all that. And you will still be there, as I understand, until a successor is right. And I assume you'll also be involved in the transition.
Yes.
To new executive director whenever that happens.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're doing a search, and it's basically a wide net that's being cast by the board at this time for applicants.
Yes, our hope is to find someone with nonprofit leadership expertise. One of the perks of working in a school's foundation is you don't necessarily have to be an educator by trade. I have 1,500 educational partners I can call on at any time. So we're really looking for that special candidate that can do operations and board development, strategic planning, fund development, all of those very niche roles that a nonprofit professional would have.
Well, let me talk about this Lilly grant. I want to ask, first of all, just about the process that you all went into, and you were very integral in this, in applying for this grant. Because to be quite honest, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong or clarify it, is that suburban school systems like HSE do not often get these sorts of grants from foundations. They go to school systems with different kinds of needs. So my question to you is, since you were involved with administrators and others in writing this grant, what did you feel you had to do to be competitive to receive some of this Lilly grant money?
So you are exactly right, and it's interesting, and I'll try to keep this as concise as possible because I have a lot of thoughts on this process. I want to talk first about your questions of the size of the grant and eligibility for grant, and then come back to the process.
Sure. So that's really part of it.
This is the largest grant that HSE Schools has ever received. By far, our CFO, Mike Reuter, has a long history of really exemplary service of the district, and he believes the second largest grant we received years and years ago was $300,000.
My goodness.
So a $2.1 million grant is unexpected and atypical for this district. All of the kudos really need to go, or I shouldn't say all, many of the kudos really need to go back to Lilly Endowment and their deep understanding that affluent communities still have needs. Affluent communities don't necessarily mean affluent school districts because of the property tax structure and the funding structure, and the understanding that school counselors really serve our students in terms of mental health, social emotional learning, academic advising, and college and career. Those four areas are not defined by zip code, and they're not defined by wallet size. And so they did not put restrictions on geography or need-based restrictions that many funders, especially governmental funders, when you're looking at federal funds, do. So first, it was a special situation that we were even eligible to apply. Once we decided we were interested and we reviewed the eligibility requirements, we knew a couple things. One was we wanted to serve our students here in those areas I mentioned, but we also wanted to contribute to the field of school counseling. Part of Lilly's interest is they pushed out a significant amount of funding about 20 years ago, and over the last 20 years, they've noticed that there has not been a substantial change in the state or the country around school counselors. In fact, we know that best practices suggest one school counselor to about every 250 children. I think the state average is closer to one school counselor to about every 600 children. Lilly Endowment, being a very sophisticated funder, knew that it was not sustainable or possible to double the school counselor fleet in the state. And so what they essentially said is, you know, we want you to take time to plan, to research, to brainstorm, because we are looking at innovative and new practices in school counseling. We don't want you to simply do more of what we've already been doing in the state. So really, nothing could have poised HSE Schools better with our HSE 21 model, with Scott Fadness and the City of Fisher's entrepreneurial vision for the city. If anyone does innovation well, it's HSE Schools.
Well, all very interesting. But explain, I'm going to just say one thing, because I remember my daughters going through the counseling process. We met with the counselors, and they were wonderful people, but they were clearly very busy. And they clearly were dealing with a number of students, and a lot of it was college planning, making sure their schedules were done in a way to get them where they wanted to go, if they wanted to go to college or whatever else they planned to do once their high school education was over. But counselors actually do more than that. And I want you to just explain to the audience a little bit why counselors and the counseling operation in any school system is so. Why is that such an important component of what schools do?
You know, I really see it, and I have a very soft spot for school counselors. My first career actually was as a counselor, and I really see it as just the foundational level of Maslow's pyramid. You know, if you go way back, if students aren't thriving you know, with mental health, social, emotional, if they don't feel that adults care about them, if they don't feel that sense of belonging, all of those things are fundamental to learning. We would love for students to want to come to school, to feel like they belong at school, to feel like they see themselves at school. And the myriad of activities that school counselors do activate that. They just are that safety net and that support system. And then you get into all the other the enrichment that you spoke about with academic advising and college career readiness. But really, we want our students to know we care about them. And we believe that if students know we care about them, then they're ready to learn.
I have to tell you a story. I covered the Columbus School Board many, many years ago. And one of the members of the school board was a nationally known expert in this area. He ran the children's home in Columbus and traveled the country. He was just, I think 60 Minutes used him on a story that they did many years ago. The reason I mention that is as a member of the school board, I remember him being the one that pushed the hardest on increasing the core of counselors, because in the work he did, he saw the importance of counseling to these students who really need that extra help.
Absolutely. And you think we have nearly 22,000 students from pre-K to really post 12 in some of our life skills classes. They all come with a different mix of needs every day, just like adults do. You know, there are good and bad days. There are, you know, life situations. There are stressors, both good and bad, that happen. And so if we can provide that, again, that foundation level of caring and concern, then we open them up to be able to thrive academically.
I think you mentioned this, but let me kind of narrow in on this one question and give you more time to talk about it. We have a parent listening saying, well, I'm really impressed. The school system has this huge grant from Lilly for counseling. What will that mean for my student? What's your answer to that question?
I think it will be transformative. And I think the Lilly proposal stretches over 4 years, but the impact of it is sustainable. So it will extend well beyond that. But I think our students and our parents will really see countless changes. I think we are being... the intent of this fund is to be very grassroots in the buildings. It is to be very school counselor and educator led. So it might look a little bit different building to building, yet the thread of student support will run throughout the district. And so you will not have a jarringly different experience at one school, and then you move either because of natural transition or redistricting to another. You will still know the goals of the school counselor. The time that the school counselor spent will be strategic. And evaluated at every building. There are some difficult roles within every school system that must be done. And frankly, some that, you know, are not the reason educators and school counselors went into the field. You think about testing, for example. You know, it is mandated that we conduct testing. What is not mandated is who conducts the testing. So in some building, maybe it is the school counselor, you know. But if that's assigned, it's strategic. So if they're handling this, what else can be freed from their plate to give them the maximum time with students? In another building, that may be a different administrator or, you know, maybe we bring in community volunteers or maybe assistant principals. But every one of those decisions that will happen now will be strategic. So we know that we are arming them as much as possible to spend as much time in direct service of kids.
Dr. Alan Borth, the school superintendent, when he announced this at the school board meeting recently, he was very praised. He heaped a lot of praise on your foundation and also on the school administrators, and you all worked as a team.
Yeah.
To put this application in, and all he talked about was how you went over draft after draft after draft. I mean, so much human effort was put into this, human capital, if you will, was put into this by some people who are quite expert in this area. And I mention that because when this was when the administrators and Superintendent Borth found out this was going to happen, in fact, I actually caught wind of it a little early.
Yeah.
And they said, please wait until we make the announcement. I said, okay, I'll defer to that. But the reason I bring this up is that he called or contacted the Lilly Endowment after this announcement was made. And he said, and this is what he said at the school board meeting, I just want to know why you chose us. And, of course, the answer was the quality of the application. So all that work came to fruition in the end?
It paid off. It was a very long planning process. It was a 7 to 8 month process because the steering team, for lack of a better word, wanted to be very intentional and very responsive to the community. Again, when you have nearly 22,000 students, it's important that we heard the student voice. It's important we heard the parent voice. It was important that we heard teachers and counselors, and that they needed to guide the work because they will be doing the work. And then also our community at large, right? What do the employers want when our kids graduate? You know, what was our local government's vision for, you know, economic development? Mm-hmm. So we have so many stakeholders that we wanted them to have a role in the process. So we did an extraordinarily robust needs assessment. In fact, one of our surveys collected 14,000 responses, and 8,000 of those were from students themselves about how they interact with school counselors, how could they interact with school counselors, what do they want from school counselors, what do they not understand a school counselor could provide. And all of that research took time.
I want to move to something else, and that's fundraising, which is a big part of what any foundation does. You can only help the school corporation to the extent that you can raise money and pass it out to people, and you certainly do a good job of that. You have several major fundraisers during the year, and you've tied into the National Giving Tuesday, which is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. You've done some creative things in the past. Tell us what you have planned this year.
So this year we have a couple of fun new additions. I'll tell you about two of my favorites. First, we often try to secure what we call a Rise to the Challenge matching fund. So this year we have more matches than ever. We have 24 local philanthropists that have put forward $26,000. So in a sense, anyone that donates on Giving Tuesday, if they donate a dollar, they're giving $2 for the schools. What's fun about it this year is we're really telling those local philanthropists' story in a round-the-clock match. So every hour of Giving Tuesday, we will announce that philanthropist, that donor's match. And so you'll really get to see folks at the heart and soul of the school corporation and who are really leading efforts in innovative education for our schools and our students.
And if the people want to follow you on Giving Tuesday on social media, what's the hashtag?
Sure, we are at HSE Foundation and then also on Facebook. So you'll see all those great images and stories and compliments for our teachers. That's really what I'm most excited about. But kicking off today is actually 10 days of giving stories. And it is not a fundraiser ask at this point, but it is more in-depth personal stories about why people do give. So today is funny. It's our camera shy story. So we have a donor that doesn't really want their picture out there, but wants to invest in local schools. And so they have a picture of their pet. So you can go on our Facebook page and see a super adorable pet. But they do want to give kudos and shout out to our educators that have made a difference in their students' lives. And then every day now leading up to it, you'll get to hear another important stakeholder's story. So it could be alumni. It could be a teacher. It could be a preschooler that isn't even in school yet, but knows they need our schools to be strong for the next 15 years.
You know, I appreciate you. You asked me to participate. I was just in so much. I just didn't have the time because I teach for Indiana University. I travel the state this time of year. Just couldn't get it done. But I'll tell you a quick story now that I have you.
Yes.
Probably the one teacher in high school that made the biggest difference for me was a man who was a history teacher, and his name was Steve Teagarden. And he was just one of the best teachers I ever had. Well, the story continues because when I moved to Fishers, he ended up being hired by Carmel as their superintendent.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I sent him a letter just kind of explaining to him what an influence he had on me. And because I know any school superintendents, they have tough days. And when you have a tough day, you may want to read something that really is nice. So I remember sending this to him, and when he sent me a response back, he showed me the little post-it note that his secretary had put on the letter saying, "You have to read this today." I know she chose that day or if it just happened to work out that way. Now, I wanted to go say hello to him, but just never had the chance. Yeah. We're both very busy people, but there are people that make a difference. And I actually think I've tried to track what he was doing. When he left Carmel, he ended up running a bed and breakfast in downtown Indianapolis for a while. So I have no idea what he's doing now, but it's a man who, you know, and I told him, I wrote this to him, I said, the only thing that's wrong about you being a superintendent is the fact you're not in the classroom anymore.
That's right.
Because you were so good at it.
Yeah.
Well, no, I talk to Dr. Borf now and then, and I'll ask him about his day's teaching, and he really enjoys talking about that.
And he still enjoys being with students.
I mean, being an educator is at the core of what he really is. And when I talk to people, when he first came here and I asked what the reaction was, the answer I got from everybody is this man's an educator. And that's what you want as a superintendent, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I do think teachers don't get to hear, and when I say teachers, I really mean educators, because it could be anyone in a school building that's making a difference in the life of a child. It could be a school nurse, a counselor, a coach. You know, some of our instructional aides, some of our special teachers hold the heart and soul of our kids, you know, so our media specialists, our art, our music, they give them some respite and some chance for expression. But, you know, not everyone takes the time to do what you did and reach back out, whether it's when they're currently making a difference or years past. I have a very similar experience with a teacher that changed my entire life, not only my career life, but just the trajectory of my life. And I think about her a lot as I'm in the schools. And, you know, I did similar. I reached back. And the funny thing is now, you know, 20 years later, I still hope Dr. Jennings is proud of me. It's a fundamental imprint that our folks are leaving on our children's lives. And I don't think we often pause and take the time to reach back out. And I think Giving Tuesday gives us that opportunity to pause, to reflect, to celebrate, and to really let them know and give them the heartfelt. We know HSC schools are great, you know, and we can all sing that every day. We have ample evidence that that's true. But what we don't take the time to do is say, Janet Lee, you're amazing, you know. And let me tell you how, and I get choked up saying this because she was one of my children's teachers. You know, you gave her a home when school didn't feel like home.
Exactly. I've heard that story so many times. I want you to talk about something. I know the answer to this question, but I want to give you a chance to talk about it, because all this fundraising is very important, and Giving Tuesday is one of your fundraising events. But I want you to talk about what the foundation does with this money that you take from those who choose to donate. Because to me, that's the real story of the HSC School Foundation. Give us some good examples.
Yeah, and I love it, Larry. And I'm delighted because you know me well. I only do fundraising so I can get to the impact work. The truth of the matter is, you know, we are a community that knows referendums well. We probably know state funding formulas well, better than most public education communities. But tax-supported dollars cover basic needs. And they are also somewhat restricted. You know, they are restricted to a general fund that pays for salaries. They're restricted to a transportation fund for our buses, or a capital fund that builds buildings. What our tax base does not support is innovation and new ideas. And I like to say the foundation is the venture capitalist for education. You think of major companies. You think of Nike. They have a research and development arm that's always looking at what is the best new technology, or what is the best new design in athletic gear, or Apple. You know, Apple, you had an iPad that was, you know, the size of your arm, and then the size of your hand, and then the size of your finger, and now, you know, we'll see where that goes from there. It's on your watch, you know, it might be embedded in our skin soon. But
that's a scary thought.
Yeah, I know. I don't think I'll do that. But you look at human services, and you especially look at public education, and where is that research and development happening? Where is the next best ideas coming from? It is the foundation's belief that those best new ideas are coming from students and educators that are in our classroom now. When they have an idea that says, you know, I think I could do genetics better, or I think I could improve literacy if, or I wonder if students would be more engaged if. Those sort of questions, that's what the foundation allows us to do. I often hear about projects that we have funded in the district, and one that comes to mind recently is Mindful Schools, which has had a tremendous impact, and lots of great research is coming out of. And, you know, I'll hear a school that we haven't expanded to yet say, this is so fantastic, how do I get it? Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, it is not in our, you know, state-funded budget. The way we get it is through private donations, and that's what the foundation does.
You talked about your board of directors, and you have a very large board of directors. I'm sure there are some executive directors who look at you and say, tell me again how many people are on your board. I mean, some could say you get a great cross-section. Others would say it would be unwieldy.
Yeah.
So explain why you have a large board and how that works for you.
We have a large board for a few reasons. One is we have a teeny tiny staff, and operationally we need as much support and capacity as we can get. That's great for the community because more of their dollars are going directly back into our schools, but it can stretch our bandwidth then. What ends up happening a lot of times is we execute great programs and then we don't have the time to tell anybody about it. And so having that large board and networking on our behalf that can continue to message has been important. The other, it gets back to what we talked about the Lilly Endowment and our school counseling. We believe it is important for all stakeholders to be at the table. And so when you look at a district of size, we're the fourth largest in the state. For us, that means we span geography. We want to represent both the red side and the blue side. We span grade levels. So we need elementary, intermediate, junior high, and high school. Special populations, whether that be, our students and family of color, whether that be our students, with different abilities, high ability, exceptional learners, physical abilities. We really want stakeholders from every level. And then, of course, the city and all of our business partners are an important role. So we have 25 community leaders on our governing board. We have 8 students on our governing board, 4 from each high school. And then we have Dr. Borff and Michelle Fullhart from the school board as ex officio members.
Well, we could talk for a very long time, and we'll have to cut it off at some point here. So I just want to ask if you have any final comments. Since you're heading into the last few weeks of being the executive director, even though you will be nearby and still tied to the school system, any final thoughts?
No, honestly, my final thought is just, first to thank the community for really support of the foundation over the last several years. We have seen tremendous growth in what we've been able to do for our educators and our students, and that is only made possible by the generosity of this community. And really applaud the greater Fishers, and I want to include, our schools in Noblesville and Fortville, McCordsville, for really, getting public education and how important it is for the community. You look at this community who has supported referendums, they turn out in droves for, any type of committee work, volunteer work. The Lilly Endowment effort is now pulling in about 600 volunteers. And it doesn't matter if it's on a PTO or an athletic booster or a redistricting committee, anything that happens, this community really rises. And I think when you look at the success of economic development, Fishers was just named top, place to live in Money Magazine. I think our schools are the backbone of really many of those accolades. And really, it's just a testament to the people in this community valuing and supporting our local schools.
If you talk to the real estate agents, they'll tell you that the school system has had a dramatic effect on the growth in this community. And I know the city officials understand that.
Absolutely.
And the foundation has certainly had its role in that. Well, Freedom, thank you so much. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk to you in your new role.
I hope so.
To talk about the Lilly Grant and how it's going you don't have all the answers. You're still working on how it's all going to happen. So
that's right.
As it rolls on, we'll certainly rely on you to tell us more about that. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry.
My thanks to Freedom Kolb. And a special thanks to the staff and management of Fisher's newest restaurant, Another Broken Egg, in the Switch Building downtown, which specializes in breakfast fare. Another Broken Egg held a fundraising event for the foundation Saturday morning, November 18th. The restaurant opens its doors to the public Monday, November 20th. Find out more at anotherbrokenegg.com. This is the Larry and Fishers podcast. My name is Larry Lannon. I write the local news blog, LarryandFishers.com, from Fishers, Indiana, the suburban community northeast of Indianapolis. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.